And dry start to the weekend, staying mostly cloudy across eastern parts, but western and especially northwestern Scotland will see plenty of sunshine and temperatures will reach 13. Now, for Saturday night, the rain in central England will ease for a time. The winds will die down as well, turning quite cold where we have clear skies to the far north and the far south. And then for Sunday, there'll be some more heavy rain coming in across the eastern areas. There'll be more details on that to follow, of course, in the next 24 hours. Mairead, back to you.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Sherry there at the BBC Weather Centre. Now on Radio 4, the Nobel laureate, the late Seamus Heaney, reads the final part of his translation of Beowulf. After killing the dragon, Beowulf lies dying. He orders Wiglaf to raid the dragon's treasure to ensure he leaves the Geat people well endowed. Wiglaf returns to the hoard, knowing that it has been won and paid for dearly by Beowulf's death.
Then a stern rebuke was bound to come from the young warrior to the ones who had been cowards. Wiglaf, son of Weastan, spoke. He upbraided the battle dodgers, saying, Beowulf had little cause to brag about his armed guard. Yet God, who ordains who wins or loses, allowed him to strike with his own blade when bravery was needed. I could do little to protect his life in the heat of the fray, yet I found new strength welling up when I went to help him. Then my sword connected, and the deadly assaults of our foe grew weaker, the fire coursed less strongly from his head. But when the worst happened, too few rallied around the prince. So it is goodbye now to all you know and love on your home ground, the open-handedness, the giving of war swords. Every one of you with freeholds of land, our whole nation, will be dispossessed once princes from beyond get tidings of how you turned and fled and disgraced yourselves. A warrior will die sooner than live a life of shame. Then he ordered the outcome of the fight to be reported to those camped on the ridge, that crowd of retainers who had sat all morning, sad at heart, shield-bearers, wondering about the man they loved. Would this day be his last, or would he return? He told the truth and did not balk the rider who bore news to the cliff-top. He addressed them all. Now the people's pride and love, the Lord of the Geats, is laid on his deathbed, brought down by the dragon's attack. Beside him lies the bane of his life, dead from knife wounds. There was no way Beowulf could manage to get the better of the monster with his sword. Wiglaf sits at Beowulf's side, the son of Weastan, the living warrior watching by the dead, keeping weary vigil, holding awake for the loved and the loathed. Now war is looming over our nation. Soon it will be known to Franks and Frisians far and wide that the king is gone. Hostility has been great among the Franks since Higelac sailed forth at the head of a war fleet into Friesland. There the Hetwara harried and attacked and overwhelmed him with great odds. The leader in his war gear was brought low, fell amongst followers. That lord did not favour his company with spoils. The Merovingian king has been an enemy to us ever since. Nor do I expect peace or pact-keeping of any sort from the Swedes. Remember, at Ravenswood, Ungenthau slaughtered Hethkin, Hrethel's son, when the Geat people in their arrogance attacked first the fierce Scylfings. The return blow was quickly struck by Ochtere's father. Old and terrible, he felled the Sea King. Then he kept hard on the heels of the foe and drove them, leaderless, lucky to get away, in a desperate rout into Ravenswood. So this bad blood between us and the Swedes, this vicious feud, I am convinced, is bound to revive. They will cross our borders and attack in force when they find out that Beowulf is dead. In days gone by, when our warriors fell and we were undefended, he kept our coffers and our kingdom safe. He worked for the people, but as well as that, he behaved like a hero. We must hurry now to take a last look at the king and launch him, lord and lavisher of rings, on the funeral road. His royal pyre will melt no small amount of gold. Heaped there in a hoard, it was bought at heavy cost, and that pile of rings he paid for at the end with his own life will go up with the flame, be furled in fire. Treasure no follower will wear in his memory, nor lovely woman link and attach as a torque around her neck. But often, repeatedly, in the path of exile, they shall walk bereft, bowed under woe, now that their leader's laugh is silenced, his spirits quenched. Many a spear, dawn cold to the touch, will be taken down and waved on high. The swept harp won't waken warriors, but the raven, winging darkly over the doomed, will have news, tidings for the eagle of how he hooked and ate, how the wolf and he made short work of the dead. Such was the drift of the dire report that gallant man delivered. He got little wrong in what he told and predicted. The whole troop rose in tears, then took their way to the uncanny scene under Ernaness. There, on the sand, where his soul had left him, they found him at rest, their ring-giver from days gone by. The great man had breathed his last. Beowulf the king had indeed met with a marvellous death. But what they saw first was far stranger. The serpent on the ground, gruesome and vile, lying facing him. The fire dragon was scarcely burnt, scorched all colours. From head to tail, his entire length was 50 feet. He had shimmered forth on the night air once, then winged back down to his den. But death owned him now. He would never enter his earth gallery again. Beside him stood pitchers and piled up dishes, silent flagons, precious swords eaten through with rust, ranged as they had been while they waited their thousand winters underground. That huge cache, gold inherited from an ancient race, was under a spell, which meant no one was ever permitted to enter the ring hall unless God himself, mankind's keeper, true king of triumphs, allowed some person pleasing to him and in his eyes worthy to open the hoard. Wiglaf, son of Weostan, spoke. Often when one man follows his own will, many are hurt. This happened to us. Nothing we advised could ever convince the lord we loved, our land's guardian, not to aggravate the keeper of the gold. Let him lie where he was long accustomed, lurk there under earth until the end of the world. He held to his high destiny. The hoard is laid bare, but at a grave cost. It was too cruel a fate that forced the king to that encounter. I have been inside and seen everything amassed in the vault. I managed to enter, although no great welcome awaited me under the earth wall. I quickly gathered up a huge pile of the priceless treasures hand-picked from the hoard and carried them here where the king could see them. He was still himself, alive, aware, and in spite of his weakness, he had many requests. He wanted me to greet you and order the building of a barrow that would crown the site of his pyre, serve as his memorial, in a commanding position, since of all men to have lived and thrived and lorded it on earth, his worth and due as a warrior were the greatest. Now let us again go quickly and feast our eyes on that amazing fortune heaped under the wall. I will show the way and bring you close to those coffers packed with rings and bars of gold. Let a bier be made and got ready quickly when we come out, and then let us bring the body of our Lord, the man we loved, to where he will lodge for a long time in the care of the Almighty. Then Weohstan's son, stalwart to the end, had orders given to owners of dwellings, many people of importance in the land, to fetch wood from far and wide for the good man's pyre. Now shall flame consume our leader in battle, the blaze darken round him who stood his ground in the steel hail, when the arrow storm shot from bowstrings pelted the shield wall. The shaft hit home, feather-fledged, it finned the barb in flight. Then the wise son of Weohstan called from among the king's thanes a group of seven. He selected the best and entered with them, the eighth of their number, under the God-cursed roof. One raised a lighted torch and led the way. No lots were cast for who should loot the hoard, for it was obvious to them that every bit of it lay unprotected within the vault, there for the taking. It was no trouble to hurry to work and haul out the priceless store. They pitched the dragon over the cliff top, let tides flow and backwash take the treasure minder. Then coiled gold was loaded on a cart in great abundance, and the grey-haired leader, the prince on his bier, was borne to Hronsness. The Geat people built a pyre for Beowulf, stacked and decked it until it stood four square, hung with helmets, heavy war shields, and shining armour, just as he had ordered. Then his warriors laid him in the middle of it, mourning a lord far famed and beloved. On a height they kindled the hugest of all funeral fires. Fumes of wood smoke billowed darkly up. The blaze roared and drowned out their weeping. Wind died down, and flames wrought havoc in the hot bone house, burning it to the core. They were disconsolate and wailed aloud for their lord's decease. A Geat woman too sang out in grief. With hair bound up, she unburdened herself of her worst fears, a wild litany of nightmare and lament. Her nation invaded, enemies on the rampage, bodies in piles, slavery and abasement. Heaven swallowed the smoke. Then the Geat people began to construct a mound on a headland, high and imposing, a marker that sailors could see from far away, and in 10 days they had done the work. It was their hero's memorial. What remained from the fire they housed inside it, behind a wall as worthy of him as their workmanship could make it. And they buried torques in the barrow, and jewels, and a trove of such things as trespassing men had once dared to drag from the hoard. They let the ground keep that ancestral treasure, gold under gravel, gone to earth, as useless to men now as it ever was. Then 12 warriors rode around the tomb, chieftains' sons, champions in battle, all of them distraught, chanting in dirges, mourning his loss as a man and a king. They extolled his heroic nature and exploits, and gave thanks for his greatness, which was the proper thing, for a man should praise a prince whom he holds dear and cherish his memory when that moment comes when he has to be convoyed from his bodily home. So the Geat people, his hearth companions, sorrowed for the lord who had been laid low. They said that of all the kings upon the earth, he was the man most gracious and fair-minded, kindest to his people, and keenest to win fame.
Seamus Heaney was reading the final part of his translation of the epic Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf. Beowulf was produced in Salford by Susan Roberts. Now, just before the shipping bulletin, a wee taste of Sailing By. Now, here is the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Saturday, the 12th of October. There are warnings of gales in Jermyn Bight, Humber, Thames, Wight and Portland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Wight, 1013, expected Central France, 1016 by 1800 Saturday. High Fair Isle, 1,035, expected 100 miles north of Fair Isle, 1,034 by same time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking, north at Cira. Northerly or northeasterly, 4 or 5, occasionally 6 in north later, fair, good. South of Cira, easterly or northeasterly, 3 or 4, but 5 or 6 in far south, fair, good. 40s, Cromarty, 4th. Northeast.